As the silent seconds dance in their eternity about me and set aflame again the fire to inspire my nimble fingers to procure the pen and awaken it in a resurrection, transforming the ink to the blood of the writer. As once again he bleeds his acquired wisdom like a light into the world.
Good morning, folks. This is Claudio Speakeasy, the literary and all else. I want to give a little background on Jen very quickly. Jen's concert will again be March 1st at 7 p.m. Tickets are available for $20. Or a One Strong Woman package, which includes the concert, an autographed CD, and pre- and post-show cocktail party for $40. Tickets are available the night of the show or by calling the box office at 919-774-4155. That, of course, is Temple Theatre, and I'm told that Peggy is still working for those fundraising dollars to keep Temple Theatre afloat. I think she has about 50,000 and needs 100,000 or more to keep the place afloat, and otherwise we're going to lose her back to Broadway, and I'd hate to see that happen. Don't want to lose a good buddy. Anyway, Jen Chapin's musical style, her music is a jazz-tinged urban folk. Story songs that search for community and shared meaning, powered by the funk, soul, and improvisation of the city. Critics have hailed her work on albums such as Linger in 2004 and Ready in 2006 as thoughtful, worth savoring. People have said it was smart, observant, lyrically deft, politically aware, and emotionally intuitive. That's People Magazine. Milwaukee Journal Sentinel refers to her performances as addictive. The Boston Globe says supremely confident, slightly off-center, and instant. And that's the word on Jen Chapin, whom I said will be calling in around 10:20 a.m. this morning on Claudio Speakeasy, the literary and all else. I know John Paul's got his show coming up right afterwards. That is called the... Remind me of the name of that show, John Paul.
John Paul's Truth Quest and Variety Hour.
And there you have it. While we're on the subject of things here, a friend of mine sent me this rather humorous little thing about the stimulus bill that I thought I'd read. And he heads it off, and you can make sense of this as you hear me read this thing, but he heads the whole thing off with, "I have a much better explanation. We got screwed." So I'll jump into it here. I think we can say that on radio.
Yeah, I believe we can. Yes.
Good. Just think of screwdriver and something you twist into a doorknob. Be a tough doorknob, actually. Shortly after class, an economics student approaches his economics professor and says, "I don't understand this stimulus bill. Can you explain it to me?" The professor replied, "I don't have any time to explain it at my office, but if you come over to my house on Saturday and help me with my weekend project, I'll be glad to explain it to you." The student agreed. At the agreed-upon time, the student showed up at the professor's house. The professor stated that the weekend project involved his backyard pool. They both went out back to the pool, and the professor handed the student a bucket. Demonstrating with his own bucket, the professor said, "First, go over to the deep end and fill your bucket with as much water as you can." The student did as he was instructed. The professor then continued, "Follow me over to the shallow end and then dump all the water from your bucket into it." The student was naturally confused, but did as he was told. The professor then explained they were going to do this many more times, and began walking back to the deep end of the pool. The confused student asked, "Excuse me, but why are we doing this?" The professor very matter-of-factly stated that he was trying to make the shallow end much deeper. The student didn't think the economics professor was serious, but figured that he would find out the real story soon enough. However, after the sixth trip between the shallow end and the deep end, the student began to become worried that his economics professor had gone mad. The student finally replied, "All we're doing is wasting valuable time and effort on unproductive pursuits. Even worse, when this process is all over, everything will be at the same level as it was before. So all you'll really have accomplished is the destruction of what could have been truly productive action." The professor put down his bucket and replied with a smile, "Congratulations, Now you understand the stimulus bill.
Yes.
Somehow I thought that was appropriate for the wee hours of the morning.
Yes.
Surprised you don't have anything to add to that, John Paul.
That said it all.
That's kind of what it feels like, the whole thing. Really want to encourage you folks to do what you can to support the Temple Theater. Peggy's doing an amazing job there, and I know she really would like to stay in this area and keep that beautiful little house afloat. So do go and see Jen Chapin's concert on March 1st. I think I may have mistakenly sent an email that said March 7th, which I did not mean to do.
Uh-oh.
It was at 7 p.m. I was what do you call that? Dyslexic?
So it's March 7th at 1 p.m. instead of...
That's March 1st at 7 p.m. Don't start that. Because it's an easy groove to slip into. And what is going to be some of the meat on your bones today for your show, John Paul?
I'm just going to ramble on about the lies that you hear all the time on the mainstream media. I don't seem to be able to get on the internet here, so I may not be able to do it, but I'm going to try to play some interesting statements from a conference that was held recently where a Jewish action group, an American Jewish action group, talks about the Israeli war crimes in Gaza.
Oh, goodness.
And these are Jews, so they can't be accused of being anti-Jewish, okay? They're just telling the truth. They're just simply telling the truth.
Well, you know
how what happened.
How can we actually distinguish that the media is lying to us when it or whether or not they're telling us the truth when we likely never hear the truth? So what do we have to weigh it against?
Well, the way I look at it and the way I perceive it is you look at the internal inconsistencies that are in the media reports. And by doing so, you get the clue that, wait a minute, something doesn't seem quite right here. And you look at, for instance, the things that you do learn in the media, that during the Gaza massacre, a total of 3 Israeli citizens were killed by Katyusha rockets, and a total of 1,500 Palestinians were killed by the Israeli IDF. Okay? I mean, that's an inconsistency of numbers that clues you into the fact that the Israeli response was disproportionate. This disproportionate military response is a war crime. It is a crime against humanity. It is forbidden by the UN Charter. Israeli is a signatory to the UN Charter. They have willfully violated the charter to which they signed up when they became a member of the UN. It violates the principles of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which they are also a signatory to. So over and over again, you see these inconsistencies, and they clue you in to the fact that you're not being told the whole story,
mm-hmm.
and then
so
you can
explore.
Start searching to find right. out what the real truth is.
Sadly, something a lot of people don't go out there. And
that's when you find out things like it wasn't Hamas who broke the ceasefire. It was not. It was Israel. And they did it, guess when? On our election day. On November 4th, they killed 6 Palestinians who were doing something they didn't like. And they may have been militants, but you know what? It is allowed to resist an occupation. That is legal under international law and under the Declaration of Human Rights and under the laws of war and under the 4th Geneva Convention.
And if you want to hear more about that, you can tune into John Paul's Hour right after this one.
Thank you
that's
very
his
much.
Truth or...
Truth or Consequences?
No. That's where I was going.
It's John Paul's Truth Quest and Variety Hour.
Wonderful. Now, we definitely need people on the lookout to question government, that's for sure. It cannot be left to run on its own because it runs amok. We certainly have proof of that. I want to mention that Valerie Carl, my nephew Stephen, and my brother Dieter and I are going to ArtSync Magazine's launch party on Saturday the 28th at 7 p.m. in Wilmington.
Then I might go.
So congratulations. Yeah, I'm hoping John Paul may join us. So in case you're listening, Christine, we may yet have another one added to my troops. Give us plenty of people to drive back on the way home.
We're going to bring the whole city.
That's it.
Yeah, it's going to be a party.
We're transferring the locals. But want to give you a big hug and congratulations. Also looking forward to meeting your dad, George Petros, and of course having him on the show next Tuesday. He will be on with me from 1 to 3 p.m. Since he doesn't like to get up early, and we're making it a two-hour show. So we're trying to be as accommodating as we can here at WCOM 103.5 FM. See, we're a bunch of nice guys and gals.
I don't like to get up early either, John.
See, you're not even awake yet.
You're still not awake.
I'm working.
You've got ways to go. No,
it's not happening.
Hello.
Yes, yes. And of course, Valerie, I was hoping to see her here this morning, but I guess she did not make it.
She's on another project.
Ah, okay. And apparently yesterday when I telephoned you, you were, like you said, dealing with several...
20 meetings going at the same time.
Good Lord.
Well, you know, in this state of the economy, you kind of got to have them all at the same time and cut costs.
Yes, yes, yes.
You got to go down every avenue.
That's right. That is right.
You got to put those eggs in a lot of baskets, too. Mm-hmm. Seems to make more sense. I want to give a shout-out to Jen Chapin when she calls in. I want you to realize that you will actually be initiating our telephone interaction with the public.
Yeah, this will be the first time we do a call-in.
This will be the first time, exactly. We've just sort of avoided that up to now. But
I'm probably going to do that on my show today, too, for the first time.
Oh, really? Good.
Yeah. Yeah, if in that way, maybe I can tell whether or not there's anyone listening.
So, you
know,
so
if I get one call, then I know, well, at least one person is listening.
So please have a forgiving heart when you call in, just in case this place turns to a frazzle. I think we should be able to pull it off, though.
Claudio, did you bring your cell phone?
Did I bring my cell phone?
Yeah, we're calling from the parking lot.
Oh, that. Yeah, yeah, that's a good idea. Actually, I left it in the car.
That's part of the variety show.
I just wanted to go ahead and cover that ahead of time. Also want to give a special thanks to Marjorie Watson and, of course, Judd Patterson, who as well as Peggy Taporn, who are making this whole connection to Jen Chapin possible today.
Yeah, thanks very
much. I know that Marjorie is friends with Jen and apparently was able to lure her here some years ago, and she fell in love with the Temple Theater and that whole little area. Apparently her son... I don't really know how to pronounce his name. Is it Masio? Fell in love with the train station right across from Temple Theater in Sanford, which is a beautiful little spot. Anyway, I just wanted to send that out ahead of time. I don't think there should be any problem with the call-ins. Very few people here at the station have done it. And if this works out, there are quite a few people I can actually contact that are all over the country that I know I can
call in. Yeah, well, I'm going to be having people call in on my show from all over the country, too.
Wonderful.
I've got an activist that has been involved in the Native American causes for a long time who I'm going to have calling in before too long. I'm going to have some authors with best-selling books, mostly about the government and politics, who are very, very famous around the world, maybe not as famous here as they are in other parts of the world because they get blacked out here. But people like Webster Tarpley, Stephen Jones, who is the physicist who did the work on exposing the truth about the science of 9/11. Architect Richard Gage, who is a member of the American Institute of Architects, who's written a couple of books about 9/11, proving that the towers were brought down by controlled demolition. Number of things like that. I'm going to have people on over the phone.
Wonderful. And where are they based out of for the most part?
They're just in different... Stephen's out in Colorado. He has a place way out in the wilderness.
Is that the Indian activist?
No, that's the physicist.
The physicist. Okay.
He used to be the chair of the physics department at Brigham Young University, which is not known as a bastion of left-wing thought.
No.
extremely conservative guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's just an unbelievable number of people out and around who are well. For instance, I'm going to get a guy on that used to be Bob Dole's chief of staff, who says point blank, and in exactly these words, George Bush ordered the 9/11 attacks.
Woohoo!
And he claims to know this for a fact, that George Bush even signed a written order to do the 9/11 attacks.
Well, there's something else we can explore on your show.
It's amazing he's still alive, but that's what he's saying.
I want to give a shout-out quickly before I forget to our sponsors, our underwriters, the Carolina Theater of Durham, the historic Carolina Theater of Durham, as well as Studio in the Woods, Inc., with John Demers, the independent film company.
Appreciate your support. Hope all is going well and look forward to being informed as to what's going on. There's always something happening at the Carolina Theater, and I know there's always something happening in John DeMersch's world. I hope he has recovered health-wise.
I talked with him recently. He has had some more tests done, and they're talking about the possible prognosis and what might be done in the future. He's trying to change his diet.
Has he gained any weight yet? God knows. Every time he's skinnier than the time before.
Not really, but he's doing a little better, I think.
Good.
So,
well, blessings to you, brother.
We're hoping that he can avoid major surgery. That's the thing now. Mm. So he's going to try to do something dietary stuff that might fix the problem.
Certainly hope so. He's been wrestling with that for a while.
Yeah.
I wonder how the indie films are doing. I haven't been informed on
that.
But
he's in good spirits.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, that's one thing I can say for old John DeMers. He's usually in a very positive frame of mind.
Yeah.
Which is always a wonderful thing. How are the wolves doing or the American Indian dogs? Indeed. Just touch base when you can. And that is the shout-out I wanted to give. Again, I want to remind everybody to tune in to what's happening at the Temple Theater in Sanford. I'm trying to do all we can to help out Peggy Taphorn. The Carolina Theater in Durham they just finished, I think, their independent, bit of an independent horror film fest, which I understand did rather well.
Oh, good.
And that's the name of that tune. So at this point, we're sort of waiting for Jen to tune in.
If she should be calling in any moment now.
Any moment now, so we're going to keep the lines open for that.
We've got actually a minute before she's due.
If she is hearing us at all. Anyway.
And, of course, we have no way of knowing that. Maybe when she calls in, we can ask her if she was actually able to get us online today.
Right, on the computer, streaming, live streaming, which she should be able to. I know we've had some difficulties here. That the station's been switching over to another frequency, right? Or what
well, there's been problems with our whole internet system off and on. Like, for instance, today the station we're not able to go online through our computers today.
Right. It's always something.
We're not hooked up. But the streaming is not originating from here. It's coming from somewhere else. So I'm pretty sure the streaming hookup is working.
Has there been any more news as far as moving the station?
I don't believe we're going to move the station anytime soon.
Goody.
It's going to be a while.
So it'll be the same address for a while longer yet.
We're going to have to raise a buttload of money before we can move the station. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
And that's something we'll let you folks know when we are.
So, people out there, send us some money. Go online to communityradio.coop and donate. We need money.
Would be most helpful.
We need money, money, money.
And Carl, what have you got going on with your wonderful other half? What's happening at Artful Greetings? Anything you wanted to shout out before we go on phone?
Well, let me see. We've been involved in so much stuff lately. We're running the necessary sales like everyone else. You know, so if you stop by the gallery, we've got tons of prints and art cards.
Wonderful.
And
is this a good time of year for that?
Actually, it's a great time to pick up art and cards, greeting cards and all, because this is like a greeting card business down season for us, right after Christmas holiday season, in between Valentine's Day and
the end. That's why I was wondering. Yeah,
after Valentine's Day is over. Yeah, it kind of slows down a lot until, Mother's Day.
Whatever holidays are coming up,
right? Mother's Day.
Now, what about the show? Somewhat. What about the show you're getting ready to do here? Is that a one-time thing, or is it going to be a steady thing for Spectacular Magazine?
Now I'm trying to figure out, which show is that?
The one you're coming in for. One of the reasons you came in here today to check out John Paul.
Spectacular show.
Actually. Spectacular is actually the name of a magazine. We're not prejudging the show, folks.
All right. It looks like we're getting a call right now.
Hey.
So let me see what happens here. You want to answer the phone, Claudia?
Hello. Hello, this is Claudia. Claudia Speakeasy.
Is Audrey Layton available?
I'm afraid not. No, this was not quite the call we expected. No, we have a radio show going on.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
And you're live on the air.
You're on the air. Thank you. Try again.
So as I was saying, the Spectacular Show, we're going to be actually debuting that Thursday.
Okay, now we got another call.
Is it another call?
Okay. We might just have the real one this time.
Let's try the right one.
Let's see what happens. I like just seeing who's on
That's
the phone.
That's true.
It's kind of fun. Here we go.
Good morning. This is Claudio Speakeasy, the literary and all else.
Hi, Claudia. This is Jen Chapin.
Hi, Jen. Wonderful to hear from you. I'm in the studio with my co-host John Paul McClellan and also Carl Blake.
How are you doing, Jen?
I'm doing well.
This is John Paul speaking.
And I have greetings for you from your friend Peggy Taphorn, also from Marjorie Watson and Judd Patterson.
Wonderful people all.
That's what they say about you. Been looking forward to connecting with you. I guess you're calling from NYC.
Yes. Well, I'm officially, I grew up in the suburbs of Long Island, NYC, but I have long roots here, and my extended family is all around the city. So
I see.
And now I live in Brooklyn, and what? It's very, very much home.
I was going to tell you, I used to live in Brooklyn Heights, right on the corner of Hicks and Cranberry, and right around the corner was an area that was dedicated to your father.
Oh, yeah.
Behind the promenade.
Well, my dad grew up on Hicks Street.
Ah, wow.
And my uncles really learned music at Grace Church, Brooklyn Heights, right there on Hicks Street as
my
well.
My goodness.
Where my parents were married, where I was married, and... yeah, so that particular neighborhood has a lot of resonance for us.
I sensed there was something unique about the place. I remember getting up one morning. I was there back in 1990, and I was also chefing at a place called Luma's Macrobiotic Vegetarian Gourmet Restaurant, which was run by John Lennon Yoko Ono's former in-home chef. So, but I remember getting up early one morning. I think it was just before daybreak, and I noticed somebody sitting in a bench right on the, across the street from where I was living on Hicks, and he was making some notes just in the, under the street lamp. And I was gonna walk by and say good morning, but he seemed intently engrossed in what he was doing. And as I walked by, I realized it was Neil Simon, and I just kept walking.
Whoa.
So I knew there was something about that neighborhood when that happened.
It's a really great neighborhood. It's got a lot of history.
No doubt.
Yeah, it's special.
Well, I also remember it was in that area that when they filmed the movie Moonstruck, they did one of the major scenes right there with the dogs.
That's a classic Brooklyn neighborhood.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
classic Brooklyn movie.
I thought so, and I have no idea how I wound up there, but for some reason my life has been blessed in that regard. I've wound up in some pretty fascinating places, just totally out of the blue, and that's definitely been one of my favorites.
Well, we're looking, you're in a pretty great place now, and we're looking forward, the Raleigh area and North Carolina has, I don't know how it started, but it's kind of become a home base. It's like, more often than not, we're either touring in the Midwest and around Ohio, a very different place, but with its own charms, or we're in North Carolina.
I was going to ask you, how did you come by North Carolina? I know Marjorie had a lot to do with bringing you to Sanford, but how about North Carolina in general?
I can't even remember the first time. I think it's partly, you know, just looking at the map. I'm a little bit of a junkie for doing these little grassroots tours. And, you know, getting from point A to point B and looking at a map and saying, well, that looks like a good place to go. It's been some years, so I'm trying to remember when my first time down. I think I played in Cary.
All right. I was wondering what the catalyst might have been.
Maybe 2001. It was a wonderful place called the Six String Cafe. In Cary,
mm-hmm.
And what somebody told me is really stands for Containment Area for Relocated Yankees.
yes.
but we were there. There's a guy named David Sardina. I don't actually know if I'm pronouncing his name right, but I know him as David. He had this establishment in Cary, and then. Just the cost of doing business and paying rent. It's now sort of Six String Cafe on the road. So on Friday night, we're playing at Six String Cafe at the BNC, which is one of the venues that he uses.
Are you talking about this Friday night?
Yeah, that's our roots. And when we first played down there, we played a show that David promoted in Cary, and then we're going back, and then. Of course, we're doing the show in Apex on Wednesday.
Right, I remember
at,
about that.
At Halle Cultural Arts Center.
Yes.
And then Friday in Cary, and then Sunday in Sanford.
And I'm coming to that show, so I hope to connect with you there.
Terrific.
I'm coming to the one in Temple. I was going to ask you have a member of your band, Jamie Foxx. The first album I ever owned was Blood, Sweat, and Tears. Is that the same fella?
He was part of a latter-day version of Blood, Sweat, and Tears, so he wasn't in the band back when they were making a lot of their famous albums. But I have a 3.5-year-old telling me he needs to poop.
Oh, wow, yes, there we go. Let's take this whole thing down to earth level.
The entire world knows.
Yes. There's Toddy.
How do you say his name?
His name is Maceo.
Maceo. I wasn't sure if it was Maceo or Maceo. Beautiful name. Where does that originate from?
It has, excuse me, one sec.
Sure, absolutely. We've got to take...
It actually has its immediate origins in North Carolina, of all places. There's a wonderful saxophone player named Maceo Parker.
Ah, yes, okay.
And he's from North Carolina. I think maybe more from the Greenville area. I don't remember exactly. But he played with James Brown, played with Prince.
Yes.
He's led his own groups. And he was an inspiration both to me and my husband over many years. And...
So is that what inspired?
Separately and together. He's got a hugely expansive musical spirit and wonderful, just groove. And so my name being the most common name of the 70s.
it was definitely there, yes.
His last name being Crump. We wanted, my husband's name is Stefan Crump. We wanted to do something with a little bit of a music in it, as well as a positive legacy. So, Maceo Parker, and I think that Maceo, the name actually comes, there was a Cuban revolutionary when Cuba was doing its revolution, its independence from Spain, named Antonio Maceo.
Yes, that does
and
ring
I think in the 1880s or so, he was a big inspiration to a lot of Black Americans. They took on the name Maceo.
I see.
That's where Maceo is. Claudio, I am going to call you right back.
All right, that's fine. I think we have a drummer in the household. That's too precious. Jenny is going to be calling right back in the next few moments. I definitely want to explore
that. Was great.
That's
like
also more.
I can only imagine what's happening right now.
Yes, I think we have a qualifiable drummer in that house. You might want to get him on those instruments sometime soon. He'll be a natural.
Yes.
How fascinating that I lived in that same neighborhood.
Yeah, that's interesting.
It just blows my mind.
Yeah.
Beautiful, too. One of my favorite things used to be walking the entire Brooklyn Bridge for a morning walk.
Oh, yeah.
From one end to the other. Completely across the river.
Outrageous.
But it didn't really.
You liked walking.
Yes, it was a walk, boy. I tell you what. Great, great walk when you had a honey in your arms and you wanted to just go have a cup of coffee on the other side of the bridge.
That does make a difference.
Back. Or go to the fish market on the other side of the bridge. Because you have to schlep that fish for a long way to come back. But it was truly, out of any area that I could live. First, I lived on 96 in Broadway when I ran the Blue Star Bar or helped run it as night manager on 106 in Broadway. And then when I left there, I moved from there to the corner of Hicks and Cranberry.
Well, we are online now in the studio here. We can get online. And I could go to Jen's website and play the music that plays when the website opens up. However,
if she calls right back, I don't want to lose any moments we can get with her. But go ahead and try it.
The only problem is my antivirus program is warning me against the website for some reason.
Then let's not do it.
And I'm not sure. It doesn't actually say there's a virus. It says there's either a virus or an unwanted website, which might mean it's okay to go on to
it. Let's skip them details. Let's just
We might want to do is ask Jen if she's had any problem with her website with viruses. And
certainly bring that up.
Then I'll go ahead. I mean, she might like us to play a little bit of her music.
Oh, it'd be wonderful to play it, but I mean, we can also, I can also dedicate a show to that at some point since we are probably not going to. I have a feeling I'm going to be chatting with Jen for a little while longer.
Right.
But no, I would have I would have loved to have pulled something.
Our listeners might like to hear a little something.
Yes, am I being scolded in public here?
just making some...
If you could see me just going
making
back
some
and
helpful,
forth.
Just trying to make some helpful suggestions.
We just got married.
Like, play the damn music, you moron.
There we go. There's a lovely bride for you. So I do want to mention that one of the things that Peggy Taporn has to say about Jen Chapin is one of the interesting facts about Jen is that she's continuing her father's legacy of bringing the arts to everyone, all the people on the street, which is why she's doing the benefit for the Temple Theater.
Amen.
She and her family are also some of the nicest people I've met, and that's from Peggy Taporn. In case you heard that, Jen, the world thinks quite well of you in these parts. And at some point, we've got to get her connected with the Carolina Theater. I think she'd be a natural for that.
Mm-hmm. You know, it seems like since she's going to be at the Temple Theater, somebody at the Carolina ought to go see her. And
I've made them aware of it. I sent
talk
them,
with her about doing a show at the Carolina Theater.
I CC'd the listserv in that direction, yeah. So hopefully somebody will catch wind. Hello, Carolina.
That's a possibility.
Seems like.
But I'm really looking forward to catching the show on March 1st, which she said was Sunday.
Is it Sunday?
Yeah, because 28th is Saturday, so yeah, that would make
another
sense.
Problem for me.
This is that 28-day month.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. There's Jen. I think.
Aha! Wonderful.
Back. So let's get Jen again.
Is this Jen or Maceo?
It's Jen.
I think you've got a natural drummer in the house.
I was getting sabotaged. I don't know how much you could hear that, but I was closing the door. Maceo decided he wasn't going to let me talk.
Oh my goodness!
And then he started, you know, carrying on. And
yeah,
so
we heard
actually,
that.
I closed this. Yeah, I'm trying to camouflage the fact that I have a screaming child.
I could tell there was a rhythm that hadn't quite evolved yet, but we could definitely hear the drum beat.
Yeah.
That's right. Now, now the entire web is aware of it. It's,
oh, God. Yeah. Well, I'm sorry about that.
Streaming throughout the world.
That's why I call this a speakeasy. Anything goes.
Yeah,
we bring you Maceo throughout the world.
I figure that people are forgiving of such things.
Yes, absolutely.
I've kind of been running my music career like that for the past 3.5 years.
I think it was darling.
Well, everybody understands. I'm a working mother.
Yeah.
But Maceo is a very wonderful boy, and he's actually a lot of fun to bring on the road, and he's a traveling pro. And we're going to be tomorrow morning doing a 9-hour drive down
to Cary.
To Apex.
Or to Apex, that's right.
And it's the kind of thing to Hallie, where, you know, I'll make a few extra preparations with snacks and toys, but basically we can count on that working, you know.
Yeah, right. I'm sure he keeps you tied up for all your spare time.
Yeah, pretty much. but he also has a great imagination and ability to entertain himself.
No doubt.
Just not at this current moment where he decided to sabotage.
I actually, there's something interesting on your website that I sort of wanted to ask a question about. You had something on there about breastfeeding and the workplace. I just kind of wondered what originated that theme.
there's a term that I'm close to embracing, which I think is really funny, called a lactivist.
Right.
But I think we're in a movement now, I think, in the world, in the country, of people understanding that nature has some things that we can learn from.
Absolutely.
And we're kind of going full circle from the 50s and 60s when it was all about the glories of science and what humanity can create, which is superior to what
nature has.
Yeah, and I think breastfeeding was part of that. I mean, it was definitely, I think, the low point for breastfeeding in America was 1972, around then. But
that's exactly when my wife breastfed our child in public, didn't give a damn what anybody said.
Yeah, that's the thing. You end up you don't think you're not trying to make a political statement. You're trying to
nurture the child.
You know, you know, breasts are very decorative, and you know, we enjoy them for other reasons.
Yes, indeed. I've never quite gotten over them myself.
Yes, me neither.
But they are, there's a particular reason why they're there, and they're pretty good at doing that.
Yes.
You know, especially when people are worried about their finances, breast milk is free.
Absolutely.
As opposed to, you know, a couple, you know, $10,000-$20,000 that you could spend on formula and bottles and things.
Which is, of course,
year.
What the system would prefer.
Well, it's certainly a lot better for your child than formula.
Yeah. I mean, they've never been able to replicate all the particular benefits.
And right. You know, there's a big movement
so
right
convenient.
Now.
Not to mention what we don't know about the emotional levels that it nurtures in a child during the growing up process.
Yeah. So I believe strongly that, you know, they say that the biggest factor in women breastfeeding is support that they get from their partner, from their families, from coworkers, and so I'm, you know, just trying to put my little voice towards that.
Well, they can call me; I'll support it.
Yeah, great. No, but it's true. There's a lot of people who you know, judge other people. They find it aesthetically unattractive, and
which is so ridiculous.
What is wrong with those
people? Absolutely.
Those people are messed up.
I grew up in Africa, and we used to watch entire tribes do these wonderful walks outside with their musical instruments, always topless, and so that's something I grew up with. It was second nature to see that, and yet in this country they seem ashamed of it, which is totally bizarre.
Ashamed and proud. It's that, you know, that both obsession with, you know, sexuality and the puritanism that like are side by side. But, you know, I grew up, you know, both in a musical family, but also in a family that had a big sense of activism and community obligation, particularly the issue of hunger. Mm-hmm. And you might remember in the 70s, there was a big scandal that the Nestle Food Corporation was marketing their formula in third world countries, and they were actually dressing up saleswomen as nurses and going into regions where people couldn't afford to buy formula, let alone, and they were selling the powdered stuff, let alone get a reliable sanitary water source to make the formula. And so babies were dying. And because people were being told, well, this is the right thing to do for your baby, and this is what modern people do. And so you know, I see it, breastfeeding also as a hunger issue. And
I was going to ask you about next, since you support something in that vein as well.
Yeah, sure. Well, in this country, too, it's the people who can most benefit, who can least afford to not breastfeed, who are least likely to breastfeed.
Yeah.
Poor, teenage, single mothers, you know, less educated.
They've taken on the corporate brainwashing.
Yeah. They just don't have the support. I mean, when Maceo was born, in the hospital, they have posters about breastfeeding everywhere you go. And he was just born, and we were going into the hospital room, and there's the nursery, and they say, well, okay, well, you drop him off here. You know, an orderly is saying this. It's like, no, he's going to stay in the room with me. And they said, well, what is he going to do for milk? All the milk is in the nursery. No, actually, hasn't quite come in yet, but
I'm developing
a pretty reliable supply here.
Yeah, well, also
but
with
this
the
hospital, so you there,
this is a hospital.
Mixed messages.
That is pathetic.
Yeah, it's really
everywhere.
That's strange. You know, the earliest portion of breastfeeding is the most important part. Because we learned this when my first child was born. You got this stuff called cholesterol that comes in first, and that's the stuff that gives your child all these really important chemical signals for immunity development. Yes. and to fix little problems that have to do with digestive systems. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Exactly.
How important that is.
And they're tracking, you know, breastfeeding to reduced obesity and fewer allergies and reduced asthma and all these things. So that might be my I don't know about making money out of it, but that might be my next career being a or my side career, being a lactivist.
Certainly. a noble task.
There is a nice the food and hunger issues are part of me and somehow I find more and more that food and music have strange synergies and that part of what we're going to be doing on this tour is some some food drives and some awareness raising, which of course I think more than ever before people don't really need their awareness raised so much about their neighbors in need that it's the organizations that I work with, in particular Y, World Hunger here in New York City, we've found that some of our grassroots fundraising efforts have actually not been, they've unexpectedly kept steady or slightly increased even through the economic downturn, because people there are more people maybe giving lesser amounts, but it used to be like high rollers who give big checks.
Mm-hmm.
And for whatever reason, but now it's like a lot of regular people are saying, well, I don't have much, but I understand what's going on, and I need to help people
More like the community coming together in that sense. It's interesting. Yeah. What happens when there is a turndown. I also wanted to ask you, understand they're going to be lecturing at North Carolina Central University. Can you tell us anything about that?
Sure. It's
some of those folks listen to us right now.
Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of another thing. It's kind of funny that a friend of mine who I got to know through music, and she works at the university.
Mm-hmm.
She's involved with their graduate program, their executive master's in public administration program, which is about 20 or 40 students who are professionals who've had 10-year careers working for in the nonprofit or the in public firms. And many of whom I'm assuming have done different kinds of public service and social services. So as part of the program, they have different people speaking about from the nonprofit community. From it's one of those things that it's a little bit surprising to me still. It's like, well, I'm just a singer.
But you're a name. You're an image. There's more to it than all that.
Yeah, and I have certain experiences with the hunger fighting community that I can speak about.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to be speaking about Y, which my dad Harry founded in 1975, and which I've been chair of their board of directors, and I'm now secretary.
Uh-huh.
And I'm very involved with Y, and so I'll be talking about Y and the hunger issues, and it's, a lot of it's going to be sort of geeky, administration kind of talk, but it's all interesting to me.
As far as your
I'll sing a song or two, but that actually prompted this particular trip. I'm always waiting for some kind of little signal that gets me going. So I'm trying to stay a little closer to home this year and do more songwriting. And
you have workshops. You have workshops to that effect as well, right?
On Saturday morning, I believe at 11 o'clock, doing a lyric writing workshop at Six String Cafe at the BNC in Cary.
My goodness.
649 Walnut Street. So doing the concert there Friday night, and people can actually buy a combined ticket sort of a discounted ticket package of coming to the show and coming to the workshop. And it'll be a two-hour workshop, and it should be fairly intimate as far as, I don't know, I expect maybe there'll be 10 people, and we'll really get to dig into people's own work. And in the past, I've done these workshops with people who are both experienced songwriters, might be mixed in with people who've never written a song before in their lives, but they just to sort of get involved with expressing issues that are important to you. And that's often a tilt to my workshops is, I'm all for the classic love song, and I'm certainly always, you know, wanting to write those. But I think that writing songs about social issues it's a particular challenge. That it's fun to figure out ways to solve that puzzle.
It can sometimes be. I was going to say, it can sometimes be incorporated sort of in the vein of Joan Baez and the way she manages to implement aspects of that sort of thing into a love song or into a ballad.
Right. Well, that's true. That's a great way to approach it, is to find a way to connect. And that's certainly an approach I advocate, is, you know, so often amateurs or even, you know, professionals, songwriters, they say, oh, I'm going to write a song about homelessness, and they kind of get stuck in the same cliches and that sort of them, poor them, I feel so bad, you know, as opposed to really getting inside a story or a connection or an intimate
And it even helps to live it a little somehow in some vein. I know that a lot of my writing comes from having lived many of those things, not so much homelessness, but being on the road and just identifying with people that you meet, somebody that pours their soul out to you, and you can really connect with where they're coming from and how you might have seen yourself in that place, and then reach to that aspect of yourself.
Right. So the ancient, you know, write what you know.
Yeah, it's always the safest bet.
Yep. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Remind us of all these dates again. I want the audience to hear it again.
Wednesday, tomorrow, the 25th.
Yes.
Playing at 7 o'clock at the Holly Cultural Arts Center
in
and
Apex.
That's a show that's sponsored by the Arts Council in Apex.
And I know Judd Patterson and Marjorie, or I'm not sure which name to mention first there, Marjorie, and I think they may have tuned you into that as well, didn't they?
Yeah, I think Judd had a particular connection with the
Howard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but yes, it's definitely hard to tell where one connection is and the other begins. But on Thursday, we're actually doing a private house concert in Wake Forest.
Oh wow!
And that's something we really enjoy doing, and I'm always telling people.
It's an interesting
idea.
When
are you coming? When are you coming to such and such? I say, whenever you're willing to open up your living room.
So, yeah.
Because house concerts can be strangely profitable.
Interesting.
because aside from just all the meaningful aspects of playing in a. In an intimate environment, and you don't have to worry in most cases about sound system and any sort of technological barriers. You're just right there.
Right.
I think
most people that come there, pardon me for intruding here, most people that come there come with the agenda to get something from you.
Exactly. And they might not even know me, but they're trusting the word of their friend. It's like their friend is like, the host is like a curator saying, you know, Jen Chapin's coming to play. She's great. Come here. And that's enough for them. They don't need to. People are more willing to take the risk because they don't have to worry about, you know, paying a bar charge and finding a parking spot. And it's for a lot of people, it's just more comfortable as, you know, it's easier to get out the door.
Plus the whole idea of invitation only.
Yeah, and they know that it's not going to be smoky. It's not, well, you guys don't really have smoking anymore in bars, do you?
Not much, no.
No.
It's more like hit the door.
Right. But they know that it's going to be comfortable and that they'll meet some nice people. And so we've been doing that more and more. And then, you know, that nobody's trying to cover their business model office. So, you know, usually right. the donation at the door, there's not hidden costs for the audience member. They just come in, they put in their $15 or whatever it is, and that's it. And then they eat some snacks.
Well, you've sold me on the idea.
Good. Well, next time we come down, you can do a house concert.
Wonderful. Yeah, I'll actually work on that. I've actually done a number of engagements where I went to somebody's home and took over a chef for the evening. I'm a European trained gourmet chef, but I burned out running restaurants and yachts and schooners and just sort of decided to slip into the arts. But always at the end of the evening.
Somebody's kitchen?
Yeah, take over the house, literally turn the house into a place they don't even recognize, but all of a sudden they find themselves having this incredible time in their own home. It takes a little while to sort of win over the housewife to letting her realize that you've got somebody else in your kitchen now who's actually telling you what to do in a very charming way, mind you. And then at the end of the evening, I have a glass of brandy and I tell them stories while a musician friend like John Paul backs me up musically.
We do.
That's exactly. And this is how things used to run. You know, people would have chamber music in their homes and
soirees.
So many people have these. You know, palatial living rooms that nobody ever sits in.
I know. They're never actually put to good use.
Around. But at the same time, we've done house concerts in tiny rooms. You know,
we have a lot of house concerts around this area. It's just all over the place.
It's a growing movement. Yeah. And
it's been happening here for 10 years.
We'd be happy if every show were a house concert. They're often our most...
I do like the intimacy. You're absolutely on target about that. The intimacy of it is wonderful.
Yeah, it's really neat.
So
for who I am as an artist, it's very comfortable. You know, some people they need their smoke and their light, and you know they're creating a whole persona. Which, you know, that would have been great if I were able to do that, but I never had that sort of imagination of coming up with a single name and and you know, my Kiss makeup or. It's very natural. It's like, well, here I am. I was just talking to you about toilet training, and now I'm about to sing a song.
No, well, we've covered all sorts of things today: toilet training, breastfeeding, and we can go on.
getting all into it.
It's wonderful to connect with somebody on such a wonderful earthen plateau, if I may say so.
Thank you. Yeah. So then Friday night we're at the Six String Cafe at the BNC, and the BNC, it actually stands for Business Networking Center.
Okay, and that's in Cary.
It's in Cary, and I think it's in a former bank.
Oh, really? Interesting.
But that's funny when you're driving up to it. The first time we played there, we're driving up, and we feel like, you know, what's going on here? And we go inside, and they've transformed this former bank space into a beautiful. There's wine. It's like a little cabaret space, but so that's a really special.
Sounds it. Well, I'm definitely going to make the performance at the Temple Theater. I'd love to be there on Saturday, but I've got to be out of town helping launch a magazine in Wilmington with Carl and Valerie.
Oh, that's funny because Saturday evening, so Saturday afternoon we're going back to the BNC to do, or I'm doing to do the lyric workshop. It's right. Excuse me, one second.
Sure. That magazine we're talking about, by the way, is ArtSync Magazine, coming up in Wilmington.
And then Saturday evening we're playing in Southport, you know, right near Wilmington.
Yes, I like Southport.
Yeah, it's a beautiful little town, and we're playing right on the riverside there.
Most of my work is maritime.
It's sort of a house concert kind of thing. We're playing in a bed and breakfast.
Aha, wonderful.
Right in the lobby, or in the you don't really have a lobby to a bed and breakfast.
No,
but it's like a
sort of a common area.
It's like the common living room area, and that one's sold out.
I've always thought I'd open one of those before I die when I get older.
You should go check this place out while you're there just to take mental notes.
What's it called?
Lois and James Riverfront Inn. And I think it's in the store called. They have a pretty good website. I think it's Lois. It's linked from my website, which I should have mentioned already, which is jenchapin.com.
Wonderful. I'm glad you
mentioned it. www.jenchapin.com, and all my music is up there. So if you if you log on to the website, it'll just start playing like a jukebox. But on the schedule page of the website, there's a link.
Wonderful.
To and all these shows. And then Sunday, of course, we're playing at the Temple Theater.
At the Temple Theater, which is where I definitely intend to come and connect with you and say hello.
Have you been to the temple before?
Oh, I live in the town next door, so yeah, Peggy and I are good friends. She's been on the radio show many times as well.
Yeah, we did a show down there a couple of years ago.
We've done our maritime. I've got a show called Seafarers, sort of classical maritime stuff that went really well there.
So, temple, this is a benefit for the Temple Theater. So
that's
for
what I understand.
For a $40 ticket, you get an autographed CD, DVD, my latest, which is called Light of Mine, which has a whole second disc of concert performances. There's a pre-show cocktail party and a post-show cocktail party.
Right, so if it didn't hit you the first time, you can finish it the second.
And then the concert at the Temple Theater, which is a really beautiful professional.
It's a beautiful
community theater, which I always say it's like people should not take these things for granted.
No, they shouldn't. It's an old vaudeville house, basically. Gorgeous.
Yeah, and right there on Main Street, and traveling around the country as we do, you see how much these things are a real prize.
Well, at some point, if you're ever here for any length of time, I would love to take you around to the historic Carolina Theater in Durham, which is a larger form of vaudeville house built in the 20s.
That
I think you'd fall in love with in Durham, a town away from where we are right now.
Oh, wow.
And
okay.
It's a gorgeous old house, and I would be happy to show you around at some point in the future. I hate to have to do this, but I'm going to have to bring this show to a wrap. I'm getting all kinds of hints here from folks for the next show coming on. I have absolutely loved the conversation and hope that we can do this again. I will definitely get up with you at the Temple Theater on
Sunday. Terrific.
Well,
thanks for letting me carry on.
I've really enjoyed it. We all have.
It was great, Jen. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us.
We'll see you later this week.
Cheers.
Great day.
Thanks. Bye.
All right, well, we're going to wrap up here.
And I guess we are going to wrap, so go ahead and play our exit music. What can we say on top of a Jen Chapin interview? I have nothing to add to this. It was wonderful. Thank you.
That was quite nice. Yes.
Until next time, folks. Cheers.
Once again, a chill night wind blows its gales across the sea. As the sunset casts an inflamed and rippled hue across the waters. Vast distances of liquid motion stretch their infinity before me, and I have rarely felt so free. The sails are drawn for a night of rest. Where I go from here, the sea knows best. As the veils of night descend upon me, the moon emits its silvery canvas against a spectacle of aquatic celebration, as is only seen by night. The stars are scattered worlds of light against an opaque sky, and the nightfall is a constant whisper of the mysteries around me. Truly, all description would defy the beauty I choose herein to proclaim. Yet still, though encompassed by more wonder than many a man has e'er freed his soul to admire, my thoughts are adrift with a song of my heart, and the song of my heart with a voice of my soul. Adrift, 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 drifting ever back.